Hello, everyone. Many students of Jesus and many followers of Jesus, both self-proclaimed, by the way, when it comes to many of them saying both things about themselves, are spreading myths about Jesus through their misbehaviors, also known as their misconduct. They are falsifying Jesus by saying through their actions as well as their choices that Jesus has collapsed boundaries. Jesus can't say no because he's afraid of rejection and abandonment. Jesus' identity consists of what he thinks others want him to be. He is a chameleon. Jesus has no balance of power nor responsibility in his relationships. He tends to be either overly responsible and controlling, or he tends to be passive and codependent. Jesus takes on others' problems as his own, to his own detriment. Jesus shares his personal information too soon before he's establishing mutual trust last sharing. Jesus has a high tolerance for abuse, and he has a high tolerance for being treated with disrespect. Jesus' wants, needs, and feelings are secondary to others, and he allows them to be sometimes determined by others. Jesus ignores his inner voice, and he allows others' expectations to define his potential. Jesus feels responsible for others' happiness and fulfillment, and he sometimes relies on his relationships to create that for him. Jesus tends to absorb the feelings of others, even if that means he injures himself with his own self-sabotage. Jesus relies on others' opinions, feelings, and ideas more than he does his own. Jesus allows others to define his limits, and he tries to define limits for others. Jesus compromises his values and his beliefs in order to please others, and so he can avoid conflict. Here are the other myths about Jesus that they continuously spread. Jesus has rigid boundaries. Jesus is likely to say no if the request involves close interaction. Jesus avoids intimacy. He picks fights. He stays too busy, etc. Jesus fears abandonment and engulfment, so he avoids closeness. Jesus rarely shares his personal information. Jesus has difficulty identifying his wants, his needs, and his feelings. Jesus has few or no close relationships. If Jesus has a partner, they live very separate lives, and they virtually have no shared social life. Jesus rarely asks for help. Jesus does not allow himself to connect with other people and their problems. Here's the truth about Jesus. Jesus has healthy boundaries. Jesus can say no or yes, and he is okay when others say no to him. He is okay when others say yes to him. Jesus has a strong sense of identity. He respects himself. Jesus expects reciprocity in his relationships. He shares responsibility and power. Jesus knows when the problem is his and when it belongs to someone else. Jesus shares his personal information gradually in his mutually sharing / trusting relationships. Jesus doesn't tolerate abuse, and Jesus doesn't tolerate disrespect. Jesus knows his own wants, his own needs, and his own feelings. Jesus communicates them clearly in his relationships. Jesus is committed to and responsible for exploring and nurturing his full potential. Jesus is responsible for his own happiness and fulfillment. Jesus allows others to be responsible for their own happiness and fulfillment. Jesus values his opinions and his feelings as much as others. Jesus knows his limits. He allows others to define their limits. Jesus is able to ask for help when he needs it. Jesus doesn't compromise his values nor his integrity to avoid rejection. Jesus understands that the word boundary in the American Heritage Dictionary is defined as an indicated border or limit. In Jesus' relationships, boundaries are often defined as the line that indicates where one person ends and the other begins. So, because Jesus has healthy boundaries, he has developed an identity separate and distinct from others. He is not dependent upon others to nurture his personal and spiritual growth. So, in Jesus' relationships, boundaries are often defined as a limit that indicates where he ends and the other begins, or where they end and he begins. So, Figure 1 illustrates Jesus' healthy boundaries. In Jesus' relationships, the lines between himself and his partners are easily identifiable. They are independent beings, Jesus and them. Yet they, Jesus and them, are close enough to be connected and to have an impact on each other's lives. In Jesus' healthy relationships, their boundaries are flexible. They grow and change between them. And Jesus' boundaries can be lowered to promote intimacy, or so he can have it extended to promote safety. Right? In figure 2, it is difficult to distinguish one partner from the other. That's not who Jesus is. This is called enmeshment or collapsed boundaries. That's not who Jesus is. Partners in an enmeshed relationship generally try to merge with the other in order to avoid the emptiness they feel when alone. That's not who Jesus is. This is troublesome because partners either seek to lose themselves in the other or expect their partner to become lost in them. That's not who Jesus is. Figure 3 illustrates a relationship where each partner is completely self-contained, having very little impact on the other and very little emotional connection. That's not who Jesus is. This is called an emotionally detached relationship or rigid boundaries. That's not who Jesus is. The boundaries in this relationship tend to be more like walls that prevent intimacy. That's not who Jesus is. So I felt that it was best for me to talk about these things because a lot of people have roughness of a time when it comes to self-advocacy and advocating for others. So I'll give another example off the top of my head. Jesus, if you touch the hem of his garment without permission, he would tell you bluntly but kindly never to do that again, because his clothing, tunic if you will, or robe, is a form of his material boundaries. Let's use a modern example. If someone touches your wallet without your permission, you can bluntly but kindly order them to never do that again, and it's okay to let them know what the negative consequences will be if they do that. And it's okay to follow up through. It's okay to follow through on those consequences if they insist on maintaining their belligerence against you. Those are material boundaries. You get to decide who touches what, who doesn't touch what. Sometimes you can explain it. Other times you don't have to explain it. It's okay to have unexplainable boundaries. And I think that Jesus did that many times in his life. You know, he would often say or do things where people never got the answers to why he didn't always do what they wanted him to do. Jesus didn't owe anybody explanation for every decision he made. And Jesus didn't owe anyone the ability to always have him explain himself to them. And through what I see in the Bible is that Jesus would respond to entrapment questions with simple but direct questions of his own, where he basically destroyed their gotcha attempts. He had a way of responding to foolishness with wisdom. He would do that in question form if you question him, or he would do it in parable form if you question him, or he would do it in direct answer form without belittling himself. And I've noticed that in life is that a lot of people don't understand that Jesus did not live a life of competing loyalties. Jesus did not live a life of competing interests. Jesus did not live a life of conflicts and interests. And there are times where Jesus prayed and he needed to be alone. He understood that there are appropriate times for introversion. I need to recharge my batteries. I need to experience wisdom, clarity, and discernment on my own. And then he also understood that there are times where I need to experience wisdom, clarity, and discernment with other people. That's why he was teaching, preaching, speaking, and healing. And then I acknowledged that there were times where Jesus had a social life. He went to people's homes where people cooked for him and fed him, and you know, he got to even teach people while they were there. He got to enjoy himself while he was there. That was a way of recharging himself. He got to know what it's like to laugh and talk with people that you love. That's what he did. There were people that loved him. There were times where Jesus told people no. There were times where if you did not think he could do a miracle, he wouldn't do it. If you did not have the conviction that he could perform a miracle, then not many miracles were done. And there were times where Jesus disappointed people. There were times where they felt like, well, if you're not going to be the Hercules Savior, then we're going to go from praising you to condemning you. We're going to brag about how much we love you, and then if you don't embody our version of the Messiah, we're going to say crucify you. So Jesus distanced himself from fickle people, sometimey people. And then there are times where, yes, Jesus was betrayed, not just by Judas, the embezzlement thief, but all the other male disciples betrayed him by bailing out on him shortly before he was crucified. The only people that did not betray him were the women. And Jesus first appeared to Mary Magdalene, a woman, after he came back to life. And he had the Samaritan woman be his Samaritan evangelist to the Samaritans. And when I look at when I look at what happened, between Jesus and the Samaritan woman, when they talked, I recognized that there was a playful banter between the two. And it's easy to use that passage to condemn shacking up, but here's how I see it. He wasn't saying, in my view, that you can't be with a man you're not married to. Because there are plenty of people in life who are with someone they're not married to, but there's no troubled history between them. Now, the woman, he said that to her particular because she was having relationship problems and she was having trauma complex when it came to men. So he was talking to a person such as her. I don't think he was condemning everybody that's with a man they're married to, because just because a lack of marriage does not automatically mean that you are a scumbag. That does not mean that you're a shitbag. It does not mean that you are rubbish. It doesn't make you trash. It doesn't make you soiled. A lack of marriage does not mean that you don't have a heart, that you don't have a conscience, that you don't have care, that you don't have compassion, that you don't have concern. It doesn't mean that you are wishy-washy. it doesn't mean that you are needy or clingy, and it doesn't mean that you're irresponsible or unaccountable. It doesn't mean that integrity and substance are absent from your soul. It doesn't mean that effectiveness and nobility of character are foreign concepts to you. I feel like their banter was also a flirtatious banter, because the way he acknowledged her private life, it was from a standpoint of, I'm talking to you in a respectful way. The fact that she kept talking to him and wanted to tell people about Jesus, it was a friendly battle of wits. Not in a battlefield type of way, but in a for fun type of way. Sometimes we have friendly witty talks with a person. Sometimes you may bring up certain things about that person that makes them go, wow, you really are sharp-minded. So it wasn't Jesus necessarily private life policing her. It was they had that kind of banter where he could say that and she wouldn't be appalled. Because what the vibe I get from Jesus is that he took his time with people. So he knew what he could say, what he couldn't say to certain people. He didn't go around saying that to every woman he talked to. He was like, well, she is edgy. So Jesus approached her in an edgy but loving way. Okay, she's the type of person that tends to have a TV mature type of mind. So I'm going to approach her in a TV mature type of way, but I'm not going to insult her. It was like that. And it made me think about how when Jesus was talking to her also, she was amazed at his accent and his appearance. He had a Jewish accent, a Jewish appearance. That's why she could tell he was a Jew. And I know that the patriarchal language can be disturbing in their conversation, and I can definitely agree with that. I think in that culture, that's how women and men and children and even the non-binary individuals of that time were conditioned to think of God. Now, if Jesus were alive today, he wouldn't go around using male gender pronouns describing God when it comes to everybody he would talk to, because Jesus would know how to communicate differently to all types of people. So if he was talking to traditionalists, he would have talked to them in that patriarchal way. But if he was around non-traditionalists, he would never have said such things, because as a teacher, you have to know how to communicate with different audiences of people, right? So I feel like if Jesus were alive today, he wouldn't be offended if he's called God it. Here's why. Because it does not signify nor convey that you think of God as a sewage plant. It means that you're acknowledging the spiritedness of the divine. That's how he would interpret it. Because if I'm a teacher, that means that Jesus understood learning styles. In fact, I'm going to tell you what all of those are. Jesus was a person who understood visual learning, because his parables painted portraits in people's minds. So I'm pretty sure when Jesus was teaching, he would write things so people could see what he was teaching them. So, I'm pretty sure Jesus would underline, Jesus would create different spatial arrangements with his words. I'm pretty sure Jesus used symbols and initials so people could learn. So Jesus was a visual learning teacher. Now, Jesus was an auditory learning teacher because he knew that some of his listeners learned through listening. He would do lecture and discussion groups. He would read texts out loud. He would pay attention to speaker tones. They would discuss concepts with others for increased understanding. They would definitely recite what he said so they could listen to it in their minds later. They would discuss concepts being taught with one another. Jesus would probably expand his lecture notes for discussion purposes, and he would leave extra space when he could. And he was doing tutorials and people attending his lectures all the time. Jesus was into kinesthetic learning. Jesus would use all of his senses and other people's senses whenever he did parables, whenever he taught in the temples and synagogues through sight, touch, taste, smell, hearing. Jesus would come up with agricultural parables as real life examples for his notes. And I'm pretty sure Jesus gave people quizzes and questions so they could learn, you know, like multiple choices. And I'm pretty sure he incorporated examples into his notes. So Jesus's temples and synagogues he preached in were his labs. His listeners were learning through doing. And I'm pretty sure that because Jesus was a teacher, I'm pretty sure he taught a lot of people how to write and how to read. And he wanted them to learn that because in his mind, the Pharisees are causing people to be disillusioned with God. And that appalled Jesus greatly. And so I think that his listeners were learning through reading and writing. I'm pretty sure Jesus was rewriting notes out in different words, rereading notes, and, you know, probably creating his own glossaries and his own textbooks that were simple to understand to his listeners. I'm pretty sure he used many listeners to arrange those lists into multiple written answer questions. Like, if I ask a question, I have more than one space to write down what I think about the question, or multiple written questions, meaning like a agree to disagree. What do you think about this in terms of the question? Do you agree with the answer and the question and the question and the answer? That type of thing. And I'm pretty sure Jesus taught people new and unfamiliar terms for future reference. And so I think he also taught these ways because he understood that people learn differently. He already mastered neurodiversity at that time. And I feel like Jesus really also taught people that people process information differently. And I'm pretty sure Jesus was very big on one-on-one individual teaching. I feel like he was the type of person that would make sure that everybody got their learning needs and educational needs, academic needs met through him. I'm pretty sure Jesus was a coach. Jesus was a consultant. Jesus was a therapist. Jesus was a counselor, because his wisdom was always unmatched and unparalleled and unrivaled. And I feel like Jesus was doing one-on-one psychologist sessions with people. You know, like how trained professionals will have you one-on-one every week or multiple times a week with them in sessions. I'm pretty sure Jesus was doing that when he was on earth. And I feel like Jesus had, I'm pretty sure people paid Jesus for his services. When you really are a delight to people, many of those people feel like, you know what, I should pay you for this work that you're helping me with. I don't want to take advantage of you. I don't even want your money. I want you to have my money. I'm pretty sure people did that to him. I'm pretty sure sometimes people gave him money to go buy himself clothes or food or marketplaces. And I'm pretty sure Jesus said, you know what? I'm pretty sure people said, Jesus, you know what? You ain't got to go nowhere. You know, I'm going to go do the market run for you. What you want? And I'm pretty sure they came back with great food and great water, great drinks. You know what I mean? I'm pretty sure they came back with great wine. They know he liked to drink. So I can imagine people treating Jesus that way. I can also, I recognize that Jesus was the type of person that may have had to use self-defense sometimes. I'm pretty sure some people didn't like Jesus for bad reasons. So I'm pretty sure, I'm not saying Jesus was violent. Jesus was usually non-violent, but I think he practiced self-defense. Like, I'm talking about a fist fight. I'm talking about scrapping. Because I can't imagine that you're Jesus and nobody's trying to fight you, because you're everything they're not. You're going to have that one person that's going to try to go physically toe-to-toe with you. And I'm pretty sure Jesus, being the physical juggernaut that he was, again, I'm not saying he was violent. I'm just saying he was human. And I can't imagine anyone escaping this life without defending themselves physically at least once. I've had to do it. You as the listeners had to do it. I mean, he wasn't trying to, as Frederick Douglass would say, injure them. He was doing, as Frederick Douglass would say, trying to stop them from injuring him. That's what happened. And I'm pretty sure it was understood, don't give Jesus static. You don't want it with Jesus. Don't mess with him. Because if you try to step to him, you know he's a carpenter, right? You know he's got veins in his muscles and he drinks a lot of water. You know that, right? You know that he's no punky, no sucker. You understand that, right? I'm pretty sure that was told to those type of people trying to try Jesus. And plus, I'm pretty sure Jesus was the type of person that people wanted to defend him. Like, if you were the type of person that said something out of line or out of pocket about Jesus, I'm pretty sure you would get slapped down or knocked out. I'm pretty sure people would go to war on words with you about that, about you saying something disrespectful to Jesus. I'm pretty sure those people were heckled like there was no tomorrow. And I'm pretty sure those people had to run out of town. It was so bad, they probably had to leave the entire Middle East. It was that bad for them. I'm pretty sure they were never to be seen again. I'm pretty sure there were some people like, all right, you said what about Jesus? You said, huh? and just verbally would just destroy them. Some of them probably use expletives. Some of them may not have used expletives. But either way, they gave those people the worst business of their lives. Jesus was that type of person. I'm pretty sure Jesus was the type of person that... I'm pretty sure there was adult comedy of that time. Like, Pompeii and was probably around the same time as Jesus. I might be a little off on the dates, but again, this is Pompeii. And I see Pompeii activity in the Bible. You know, the fact that prostitution existed and Jesus talked about it. If you have that existing, curse words have been around since older than the Bible days. So I can't imagine Jesus never hearing a curse word. I mean, you're around adults, right? Adults have been the same since the beginning of time. So I'm pretty sure Jesus heard adult comedy. I'm pretty sure he told his version of adult comedy in a way that did not come off as grotesque. It did not come off as shock jock. But Jesus wasn't squeaky clean either. What I mean is, his whole life wasn't. If I cause controversy everywhere I go, there's nothing squeaky clean about me, but his controversy was always healthy because he was trying to help people to understand that they don't have to live lives of self-dysfunction. They don't have to live lives of other people's dysfunctionality against them, right? So I'm pretty sure Jesus, in my view, Jesus was probably definitely the couple's counselor, the marriage and family therapist. I mean, his culture, it was considered weird not to have a spouse and children at that time. And because sex is usually the number one way to produce children, I'm pretty sure Jesus was a sex coach. He was a sex therapist. He was a sexologist. He was an intimacy coach. He was a pleasure coach. He was a sensual coach. He was an erotic coach. And he was a sexpert. There's a lot of sex in his culture at that time. I'm pretty sure whenever he talked to sex workers, how can you not talk to sex workers and not bring up sex at some point, right? So I'm pretty sure some of them may have asked Jesus for sex tips. I'm not saying that Jesus encouraged sexual self-destructive behavior. He never did. And I'm not even calling sex work that. What I'm saying is that I'm pretty sure they talked to Jesus about sex and sex tips, but they did not come at him in a distasteful way. They really wanted his feedback on, okay, what is oral pleasure, vaginal pleasure, anal pleasure? Pretty sure they asked those type of questions. If you're Jesus and you're known for being a wisdom person, how can people not ever ask you personal life inquiries? I'm just saying, Jesus was an adult. He was a man. He was fully human. So for somebody to never bring up sex with Jesus, I just can't imagine that. There are Christians who talk to Jesus about sex in their prayer lives. That's not new to him. People have been doing that to him for centuries. So I feel like when Jesus talked to sex workers, I'm pretty sure he talked about it in a way that made them feel honored and cherished. Jesus was not into sexual recklessness, and I'm not even calling sex work that. He was also not a prude, even though I'm not into prude shaming. He was balanced with it. I'm not saying sex workers aren't. What I'm saying is that him talking about sex and sex work, he talked about it from a place of even teaching them consent styles. I'm pretty sure Jesus was known for being big on consent. I can't imagine somebody being a rabbi, and if somebody brings up sex to a rabbi, they never bring up voluntary participation. That, come on. I, for the life of me, cannot with that. And I also recognize that many people would take offense to what I'm saying. It's like, no, I'm not encouraging wrongfulness. I'm not encouraging the destruction of civilization. What I'm saying is that when Jesus talked to people about their lives, they didn't leave the conversation feeling attacked, disrespected, dishonored, insulted. They left the conversation feeling like, okay, I want to keep talking to him because I feel that my humanity is both affirmed and confirmed. And that he had a way of talking to people that made them feel hopeful, made them feel, they experience growth as human beings by interacting with him. And they didn't leave the conversation feeling like God was warring against them. They felt like, you know, the way he talks about God is soothing to me. It causes me to feel like, wow, maybe God has a soft heart towards me, and that I don't have to war against God. I don't have to feud with God. You know what I mean? That's how people of his time felt whenever they talked to him. And I feel like when it came to Jesus too, that when he looked you in the eye, you felt like you were the only person in the world whenever he spoke to you. And I'm pretty sure when Jesus was honest with people, they probably laughed and giggled because they just loved his truth telling. But he spoke it in love, so that made them feel like, you know, it was, they got a kick out of hearing what he had to say. And I feel like when Jesus was a child, I'm pretty sure that there were some kids who had a crush on him. And Mary was, it was normal for her and Joseph. Jesus was probably a popular kid sometimes. I'm pretty sure Jesus didn't act out if you tried to insult his intelligence or his academic prowess. That just made him get more good grades. So that was not the right way to put him down. You really couldn't put him down. I'm pretty sure kids came over to Mary Joseph's house, wanted to hang out with Jesus, and Mary Joseph was okay with it because it was a village communal type of town, so Jesus went to kids' houses, you know. And of course, Jesus talked to adults. Him talking to the religious leaders at 12, that wasn't the only time, that was just one of the recorded times, but Jesus was with adults, but he was also with other kids. And kids and adults, I think they like Jesus. I think with Jesus, though, times weren't always great for him. You know, the human condition of children has been the same. You know, they say kids can be mean. That happened to him. Did Jesus cry? Yeah. Jesus wept. So he cried when he was a kid and when he was an adult. And I feel like when Jesus, often some adults may have been negative in statements toward him, and those adults were told about themselves. Sometimes harshly, sometimes kindly, and they had to stop. And I think the same thing happened to some of the kids. I feel like when Jesus was a teenager and peer pressure and popularity struggles, I think that Jesus embraced being a misfit. I don't think he ever tried to fit in. I think people tried to fit into him because he enjoyed standing out. He's like, nope, I'm fitting out. Was he tempted to fit in? Yeah. Did he ever? Think so, because I think Jesus was so comfortable having people adopt his way, even as a teenager, that why do I need to fit in when people trying to be like me wanted to be like anybody and everybody else for? That's how he took it. And that's usually what happens when you're so used to being the standard bearer. It's like, I don't need to bear anybody else's standard because people trying to bear my standards. They try to check off my checklist. I need to check off their checklist. That's what happened to him. And I feel like when Jesus, I'm pretty sure, and this is controversial, but I feel like when LGBTQI+ people talk to Jesus, I don't think they ever felt that he was being homophobic toward them, nor lesbophobic to them. Jesus was never transphobic. Jesus was never phobic against non-binary, gender non-conforming people. In fact, the people of his day that were considered rejects embraced Jesus because his way of going about God made them feel like they had a sense of belonging. They had a sense of inclusion. They had a sense of hospitality. You know what I mean? The way Jesus treated LGBTQI+ people, they always felt that with Jesus, my life matters. My heart matters. My soul matters. My body matters. My memories matter. That's how they felt about him. And that's how he felt about them. Jesus also when he talked to LGBTQI+ people, he could talk about gender identity, sexual orientation, sex characteristics in a way that made them feel like God and myself, there's no friction between us. There's no affliction between us. And no malediction between us and no eviction between us. That's how Jesus treated the LGBTQ plus community. Now, how did Jesus deal with the subject of abortion? I think that Jesus was into Jesus was telling people when it came to his views on abortions that when you invest in programs that address the lack of education, limited access to health care, and economic uncertainty that contribute to increased rates of unplanned and unwanted pregnancy, you're much more likely to decrease the number of abortions. I'm pretty sure Jesus was making those statements back then. I'm pretty sure Jesus was saying, investments in healthcare, paid family leave and child care, equip pregnant women with the support they need to carry and raise a child. Jesus was also saying, renewed focus on equal pay, comprehensive fertility and sex education for our young people, and publicly funded access to family planning services all lead to fewer abortions. I'm pretty sure Jesus was saying that back then. When Jesus said, hey, combined with renewed efforts to combat domestic violence, go much farther toward eradicating abortion in this country than merely appointing anti-choice leadership. I'm pretty sure Jesus was making those kind of statements back then. Lastly, Jesus was against racism because he was someone that that really had a heart for Jews and Gentiles. So I can honestly say this about Jesus. Yeah, I could see Jesus at that time. Jesus was doing rallies, street marches, strikes, sit-ins, hunger strikes, running and contributing to political campaigns, preferential patronage or boycott of businesses, petitioning elected officials, including writing letters to campaigns, mandate building in a community. Jesus was meeting with leaders of commerce, law, and politics. He was doing economic activism. I think he was doing artivism. If he were around today, he would be doing hacktivism. Jesus was doing collective action. If he were around today, he would do hashtag activism. And if he around today, he would do politics with technology. But Jesus was definitely doing civic engagement. And I'm pretty sure Jesus used written literature to demonstrate and propagate their messages and attempt to persuade their readers of the justice of their cause. When I say Jesus was including writing letters to newspapers, I'm not saying that newspapers existed back then. What I'm saying is he was writing letters to the media of their day. Let's just put it that way. and he was against the exploitation of workers. So yeah, Jesus was doing advocacy and activism. Jesus was a part of the human rights movement, environmentalism, animal rights, you know, animal cruelty prevention movement, and Jesus was into the climate justice movement of his day. I could see that. And lastly, he was consisting of efforts to promote, impede, direct, or intervene in social, political, economic, or environmental reform with the desire to make changes in society toward a perceived greater good.